Hello, everyone. Welcome to Nothing But Now, Mindful Living with me, Dr. Mary Angela McGuire, on Transformation Talk Radio. During this show, I'll help you practice mindfulness. Most of the principles of mindfulness are very simple, but putting those principles into practice can be devilishly difficult. I'm here to help you become a student of your own mind. I'll share ideas, insights, and tools you can use to release yourself from fearful and negative thinking and live from a place of clarity and confidence. Please join me as we challenge ourselves to change. Nothing But Now starts now. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Nothing But Now on Transformation Talk Radio. I'm Mary Angela McGuire, and today's inquiry is, what's the story? So one of the things that's been bugging me as I've been doing this podcast is my red face. I, in general, turn red pretty easily. I have rosacea, and so before the show, I put makeup on to try to at least even out the redness, and if possible, to cover it up a little bit. But each week at the end of the show, if I look in the mirror, I see that my face is bright red. And I feel very aggravated by that. I also feel extremely self-conscious about that. And my thoughts always, wow, doing the show really makes me nervous and anxious. So that must be why I'm so red, and I must be a nervous and anxious person. And I tell myself this story, despite a fair amount of evidence to the contrary. I'm actually not a particularly nervous person, and I'm nowhere near as anxious as I used to be. So, yesterday, I was here in my office where I work on the show, and I was working on the show, and I felt my face grow really warm, and I looked in the mirror, and once again, bright red, and I thought, wow, I'm nervous just working on this show. A little while later, my partner came home, and by this time, I was downstairs, and the office is upstairs, and our room is upstairs, so she went upstairs to change her clothes, and when she came back down, she said, it's incredibly warm upstairs. Have you noticed just the drastic temperature change between upstairs and downstairs in this house? And we've only lived here a few months. We're still getting to know the house. And I'll be honest and say that, yes, I had actually noticed that it was much cooler downstairs when I came downstairs. But the facts, right? The, heat rises, closed windows to keep a house warmer. It's almost June, it's warm outside. And of course, the windows are always closed during the show because of ambient noise. So I was absolutely aware of the facts that might have had something to do with my red face. But facts are kind of boring, aren't they? Right? I mean, where's the drama? Where are the interesting characters in heat rises? It's warmer outside, the windows are closed. But a nervous and anxious person? Oh, wow. Now I have conflict. Now I have interesting characters. Well, maybe not super interesting, but somewhat interesting to me anyway. So today we're going to talk about the stories we tell ourselves about ourselves and the stories we tell ourselves about other people. In particular, we're interested in the ones that are on a kind of mindless loop. The ones we go back to over and over again, the ones that tend to frame the rest of our experience. So, but to tell a story, of course, you have to be able to breathe. And so we're going to start with Laurie Cameron's three deep breaths. A couple of things to remember. So we want to make the inhalation, A couple of things to remember. When we inhale, we want to pause at the top before we exhale. Second, we want to try to make the exhalation longer than the inhalation. And then one thing about each breath. The first breath, just paying attention to the sensation of the air entering and exiting your body. Second breath, notice any place in your body where you feel tense and relax. And then the third breath, set your intentions for this moment. What do you need right now? So here we go. Breath number one, just notice the air going in and out. Breath number two, relax. And breath number three, set your intention. Thank you for doing that with me. So, stories. They're everywhere, aren't they? Well, our lives are stories. We tell stories about ourselves all the time. We tell stories about ourselves very directly with words and this happened. We tell stories with the way we dress, the way we live in all manner. We know other people's stories. People would say, philosophers, etc., that we are storytelling animals. Now, I don't like to make distinctions between animals that I don't know for a fact, so I don't know that other animals don't tell stories, but I know that the human animal does. It's critically important to us. It may be essential to the way that we live our lives, the stories. It's how we communicate history. It's how we communicate culture. It's how we communicate beliefs and values. And of course, the thing about stories, they have a lot in common. I think there are really, you can Google this, and some people will say there are 10 essential features to any story or 7 essential features to a story. I think there are 2, and I do not have a PhD in literature, so you can ignore me. But the 2 that I notice, whether I'm watching a film or I'm reading a book, whether it's a religious text or a history book or a comic book, there are characters and there is conflict. And that's what makes a story interesting. It's what makes it not just a recitation of facts, right? The recitation of facts, heat rises, windows close, temperature outside and inside going up, facts. Anxious person doing something new for the first time, that's a story, right? Characters and conflict. So today we're going to talk about the stories we tell ourselves about ourselves and the stories we tell ourselves about other people in our life. And while storytelling is essential, some of our stories, especially the ones that are on constant rotation, the ones we tell ourselves mindlessly, may be the cause of unhappiness and suffering. And in this particular context, though, we really want to ask the question, why is it important when you're practicing mindfulness to be aware of your stories? And I think there are 3 reasons. And the first is mindfulness. So again, what is mindfulness? It is the practice of bringing our full awareness to the present moment without judgment. And we've talked about the ways in which we might practice mindfulness through routine tasks in order to quiet our mind, to notice where our mind habitually goes, and to have the practice of gently and unjudgmentally bringing our mind back to the present moment. But one of the most common places we'll notice our mind going is to our stories. When we go to our stories, we're going to our stories of the past. And so we've talked about this idea before too, that when our mind is lost and fully engaged in that story from the past, it's not just our thinking, right? It's not just the language in our head or that voice in our head that's engaged. It's our whole body. It can be a whole body experience. So if I tell you a troubling story from my past, I feel it in my body. I feel the tension. I may feel the intestinal distress. I may feel an achiness, a heaviness, a loss of happiness, really kind of draining from my body as I tell that story, whether I'm telling it to another person or I'm just rehearsing it in my mind. So when we tell our stories, when we're lost in our stories, it's having an impact on us spiritually, physically, mentally. And that's important to know. And that's a good reason to notice what stories we tell ourselves. The second one is another topic we've talked about in the past, which is the habit of judgment. If we start to notice the stories that we tell ourselves, we will probably notice that those stories are filled with judgments. Judgments about our own behavior, judgments about other people's behavior. And so to bring conscious awareness to our stories is to start to intervene in that habit of judgment, to start to question its value and its worth in our daily life. And then the third reason is also the topic we talked about last week, which is a limiting belief. And a limiting belief is that idea we have about how the world ought to work. And when we are in an awareness of thinking about how the world ought to work, it is usually with a judgment, right? It's usually with a noticing that the world is not working as we think it ought to. And so by noticing the stories that we tell ourselves, we notice our judgments, and we also begin to notice our limiting beliefs. What are the beliefs that we have about how the world ought to work? So we're going to talk first about stories that we tell ourselves about ourselves. And I notice in my work with clients that they often tell me things that more than once, right? There's kind of a recurring, not just a theme, but maybe a phrase or a quick story often that they tell me more than once. And when they do that, then I really want to inquire about what that story means. So Elaine, who is not the, which is not the name of one of my clients, but Elaine is a client of mine who has, compared to my life, I would say, not that we're comparing, but she has a pretty complicated life. And it's challenging, daily life, right? So Elaine and her husband have two children, and they're 7 and 5, and Elaine takes one of the kids to school every day and drops him off, and then she takes the other kid to daycare, and then 3 days a week she has a 1-hour commute each way, and the other two days she goes to an office near her house. Her husband also works full-time. He has a very compelling and difficult job, one that requires a lot of evenings and weekends, and that also where there are crises that he is directly responsible for managing. So it's a very emotionally draining job, as well as a big chunk of time. They're active in their church. They're active with their son's school. They are civic-minded, engaged in their community in other respects. They have a large extended family in the area, so there's time that they want to spend. As Elaine likes to say, I'm in a family that says yes. And that's great, except that it means there are a lot of moving parts, there are a lot of people, and there are a lot of expectations. So one day we were talking about expectations, and Elaine mentioned that being on time is something that she and her husband both value very highly. And she talked about all the different ways that they make sure that they're on time. The kids are on time to school, they're on time to church, they're on time to work. That's really a central value that they hold. And then she said to me, you know, I always say to my friends, I'm either 15 minutes early or 30 minutes late. And I said, oh, well, when are you 30 minutes late? And she looked a little sheepish and she said, I'm never late. I'm always 15 minutes early. You know, Elaine comes from a culture where timeliness matters, and timeliness is considered a show of respect. If I show up on time to our meeting, I'm telling you that I respect you. And that's fine. Fair enough. That's, you know, it's a cultural norm for some cultures, not all. But being on time has come to mean something more, hasn't it, for Elaine? It's means that she's organized. She's on top of things. She's got things under control. She is right. She's in the right. She's doing it all right. And all of that says that she's acceptable to the world. And if she has to spend her precious time and energy in a constant internal battle about how to spend her precious time and energy well, so be it. But not so be it, right? Elaine's exhausted. She's overwhelmed some days. And not from the fact that she has a busy life filled with important activities or activities that are important to her and to her family, but because so much of her time and energy is spent in this internal battle. So when we come back, we are going to talk more about how this kind of story, even this really brief story, plays out in our lives and how it can be the source of suffering. So you are listening to Nothing But Now on Transformation Talk Radio, and we'll see you right after the break.
Sometimes being human has its challenges. Our physical health falters, our spirits sag, our dreams don't immediately come to fruition. Welcome to the power of Maximum Medicine Radio. Join me, Doc Martin, in conversations that will blow your mind about healing. In our hit show, Doc Martin addresses the scientific with bridging to the mystical approaches to give you a new narrative about Maximum Medicine. In this live call-in show, we will journey into the extraordinary genius of the human body and talk about other beliefs that impact being your multidimensional self. We seek the seen and the unseen and explore the earthbound and the otherworldly, all with the purpose of calling forth the maximum you. To learn more about Doc Martin and Maximum Medicine, visit www.SharonMartinMD.com.
Hi, this is Kimberly Carlson, and I would love for you to tune in to All In Healing Radio, where together we will begin to experience health, happiness, and harmony in all areas and aspects of life. Join us every first Tuesday of the month at 11 a.m. on TransformationTalkRadio.com. All In Healing will help you release layers of negative beliefs and energies for radiant health, deep joy, and greater abundance. Visit me at KimberlyCarlson.com.
How many times do you find yourself saying, it was nothing, or just doing my job? when really you knocked it out of the park. How did you get like this? Next time someone tells you great job, you'll know how to accept it and not deflect it by listening to Courage to Be Seen Radio with host Sherry Clark. Sherry Clark is an experienced global engineering leader, coach, and mentor. From her experiences one-on-one coaching to corporate consulting and executive coaching, Sherry has learned many women need at least three things to discover and face success. Learn about the ACES program, how to survive male-dominated fields with grace and authenticity, and reach the top without ever once giving up on who you are. Courage to Be Seen host Sherry Clark explores the awesome power of your entire self and how far you can go by being more you. Check out her website, couragetobeseen.com. You have the courage to be seen. See you later.
We're back on Nothing But Now on Transformation Talk Radio, and I'm Mary Angela McGuire. So we are talking today about the stories we tell ourselves and about ourselves, and the stories we tell ourselves about other people. And we're focusing initially on the first kind, the stories we tell ourselves about ourselves. And I was just talking about a client of mine named Elaine, who puts an enormous amount of pressure on herself to be on time. But there's the literal aspect of it, of her trying to show up for work and school and church and every obligation that she has in her life, not just on time, but actually 15 minutes early. And the way in which that has transformed into a kind of metaphorical expectation as well. What does it mean to be 15 minutes early, in a sense, to every aspect in your life? And when I used to teach interpersonal communication, one of the things we would talk about is that when I'm in an interaction with another person, each of us really is thinking about three things or noticing three things. I'm seeing myself, I'm seeing you, and I'm seeing you seeing me. And it's that third piece that is very, very tricky. When I see myself, or I see you seeing me, and I think about how are you interpreting me? How are you judging me? How are you making sense of what I'm doing? And I think that the place where Elaine is in some ways stuck is that her thinking is so dominated by how other people are seeing her. So that the literal thing of being on time to every occasion is a way of making sure, she hopes, that other people see her as competent, in charge, on top of things, under control, etc. But I'm guessing, based on the other things that we've talked about, that this is pervasive in her life. Of every report, every interaction with family, with friends, with teachers, with church people, with other organizations she's in, she can't just be good enough just as she is. She has to be 15 minutes early. 15 minutes early in the sense of better than, better than, better than in all aspects of her life in order to feel like she's acceptable at a kind of minimum level. And again, it may be triggered in a way by that sensation of how I see you seeing me, but what's happening for Elaine is really that story in her head. I have to be 15 minutes, because if you think about it, right, I have to be 15 minutes early. In other words, I have to exceed an expectation that I've set that is utterly unrealistic to achieve in every situation, or I'm 30 minutes behind, right? Or it's a total loss, right? I've shown disrespect and disorganization and my life is falling apart, that there are really only those two poles in some ways. So a second story that I've noticed from a client that was very telling and really revealing to me was from my client Kevin, whose name is not Kevin, but he does like that name, he told me. Kevin's an entrepreneur. And so when we first started talking, he kind of told me the story of an evolution from working for a large corporation to going out on his own, where he was more or less functioning as a consultant, to then business grew, opportunities grew. He realized he needed to have a staff. He started hiring people. And by the time he and I started talking to each other, he had a fairly large organization and he was kind of unhappy. There were days when he'd had a great success early on. And there were days when he felt really passionate about his work, but that was really fading quite a bit. And the demands of having a whole company were really draining for him. There were days when he wanted to just walk away from the whole thing. But then there were other days when he wanted to double the size of the whole business, right? So he was kind of caught between these two very different impulses about his work. So I asked him to tell me the story of moving from working in corporate to on his own to having the business with employees. And he laughed and he said, well, as I tell everyone, it was a total accident, right? I never intended to have my own business. It's an interesting story to tell about yourself, isn't it? And as we talked, Kevin often talked about the challenges of having a business and having employees. He would say things like, you know, I'm a terrible boss. And he would say it was because he wasn't very good and he felt in communicating his expectations, that he wasn't clear enough. He wasn't consistent enough. I'm a terrible boss. He would say, I have to now work with accountants at a very deep, much deeper and more complex level. And, you know, I don't have an MBA, right? How can I possibly do this? How can I possibly do it well? So it started to click for me. You know, it makes sense, doesn't it? If I got here by accident, well, then of course I'm not prepared to be here. If I'm here by accident, I never intended this, then it makes sense that I don't know what I'm doing. If this wasn't my plan all along, well, of course I don't have the right degree. I didn't get an MBA, right? So for years, Kevin told himself and everyone else that having his own company had happened by accident. And it makes a good story, right? It's kind of funny if you kind of, the visual of, you know, having a business being the equivalent of tripping down a flight of stairs. And it's, you know, it's kind of clever. It's light and breezy, but it's no longer light and breezy for Kevin, right? He's overwhelmed, he's exhausted, and he always feels like he's failing. So I want to talk a little bit about both of these stories. We've talked about one thing, which is that idea of the story that I tell myself that really is about how I see you seeing me, whether it's you as an individual, my partner, my boss, my colleague, my coworker, or whether it's you kind of writ large, the world in general, how it's seeing me and how that's the story I'm telling myself is a kind of tight vice, has a vice grip on us, pushing us in a way to see ourselves in a very particular way, right? And it's very constraining. If everything was an accident, right, then that's, you know, that's a very interesting meaning-making, sense-making device. If I'm always failing because I can't be sufficiently ahead of time, or else it's going to be a nightmare and I'm going to be 30 minutes late, that too is a kind of has a vice-like grip on a person's thinking. It's also two other things that I want to mention. One we've talked about before, which is we've talked about that idea of the internal critic, right? That voice in our head that is constantly criticizing us, never feels we're measuring up, always a very fearful voice that's always cautioning us about what we're doing and why we should be more careful or less careful or take more risks or take fewer risks, all those kind of things. So I think about this in particular with Kevin's story. You know, it's a perfect story material for the inner critic. He can't win, right? If he is successful in his business, well, it's a fluke, right? Because the whole thing was an accident. If he's failing, well, of course he's failing. He wasn't sufficiently prepared. And the same thing is true for Elaine, right? If she's on time, that's not really good enough. She should have been early. And since she's never late, that's not really an option. But gosh, what kind of uptight person is she that she can never be even a minute late, right? So she's always got something, that inner critic always has something to berate her about and a reason to criticize. Then the other concept I want to mention is one that I learned at the Martha Beck Life Coach training, and she uses this phrase called story fondling, which I always been a little uncomfortable with because I think it sounds a little bit dirty, but it's not. But it's this the way in which we might have a story that we hold very close to us, that we keep in kind of a precious place, that we polish, that we nurture, that we shed light on, that we tell ourselves or other people, but mostly ourselves, over and over and over again, right? We're going to talk later about not all stories fall in this category, right? We have stories that are critically important and that must be told, but we want to be able to discern the difference between a story where we are trying to learn and understand and grow versus a story that is simply fodder for that inner critic, a story that we are fondling and holding on to with a death grip, and a story that is putting a kind of death grip on us, that is holding us in place and is keeping us stuck in a way that is causing unhappiness, causing suffering, and that we might want to find a way to loosen that grip. So the other kind of story. stories we tell ourselves about other people. So I'm sure I've mentioned this before, maybe, who knows. So my parents were divorced when I was fairly young, and I don't remember when my mother said this, but I know she said this to me at one point, that whenever she filled out a form after the divorce, when you got to the place, and this was a long time ago, so it was when we used sex instead of gender on things like applications or various things, whenever she saw the letter F, when they didn't spell out the word female, she didn't see in her mind, she didn't think of the word female. She thought of the word failure. And that her telling me that came up many years later. I was in a graduate seminar, and the wonderful professor, also a woman, also about my mother's age, also divorced. And she had the exact same story. She said, whenever she filled out a form, she saw F for female, she thought failure, because they were divorced. They had this story that their divorce had really framed their identity in a way, and as failures, right? Not just, I'm a divorced person, and I'm not free. It wasn't F for freedom, it was F for failure. So when we come back, we're going to take a break now, and when we come back, we're going to talk about the stories we tell ourselves about other people and about how the world sees us, how we see the world seeing us. Because I think for this professor of mine and my mom, this was really what they were thinking about, was that because of their divorce, the story they told themselves was that the world saw them as failures. So I'm Mary Angela McGuire, and you're listening to Nothing But Now on Transformation Talk Radio. And when we come back, we'll keep talking about our stories.
Have you ever wondered how you might feel differently if the books were full of her instead of him? What if your history lesson was filled with powerful women leaders and rulers? As a woman, would you feel more empowered? As a man, would you see women differently? I'm Megan Edge. I'd love for you to join me on my radio show, Playing on the Edge, Radical Change with Ease, with my co-host, Dr. Pat, on Transformation Talk Radio. I hope to see you there.
We remember a time when you could simply form a thought and it would manifest. The harmony was forgotten, but it is returning now. The Power of Inspiration and Awakening Radio with Julia Griffin on TransformationTalkRadio.com each second and fourth Wednesday at 9 a.m. Pacific will take you on adventures through the heart and spirit, exploring who we once were. This intuitive healer studied under the guidance of wolves, learning from their wisdom to master a higher frequency for a new state of mind. Visit OneTrueSelf.com.
Yeah, yippee-skippee to that, baby. We're not done yet. Some of us are out here to educate and inspire. This year, 2020, is the year we gotta show me the money in the cash flow. I'm Dr. Pat. This is the Dr. Pat Show. This is Talk Radio to Thrive By.
Visit thedrpatshow.com. It's time to shake out your money-making truth on Soul Wisdom Abundance with Jennifer Bloom, creating wealth from spiritual health on TransformationTalkRadio.com. This hit show is more than your roadmap to success. It's your compass to abundance through joy and ease. Jennifer Bloom teaches you about the soul's relationship to money and wealth and how improving that relationship serves both you and the world. Learn more at JenniferBloom.com.
Living a richly abundant life sound too good to be true? Listen in to Richly Abundant Women with Julie Steelman on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Embrace a vibrant future of breaking free financially and creating a richly abundant life filled with prosperity and growth. To learn more about Julie Steelman and Richly Abundant Women, visit www.juliesteelman.com.
Hi, everyone. We are here on Nothing But Now on Transformation Talk Radio, and I'm Mary Angela McGuire, and we are talking about our stories. We're talking particularly about the stories we tell ourselves, that kind of endless, mindless loop, the stories our mind goes to in quiet or busy moments, the places that we return over and over again, but particularly the stories that are the cause of suffering. So we've talked about the stories we tell ourselves about ourselves, the ones that can be a kind of vice grip that hold us in place and keep us stuck. And now we're talking about the stories we tell ourselves about other people and about how other people see us. So I last week told you the story about the struggle I had finishing my dissertation. And it was an accomplishment, but also an obstacle that I felt stood between me and happiness. And just as I was about to finish, I realized that even once I finished, I was still going to be a person kind of plagued by self-doubt and self-criticism, the very things that had made it difficult for me to finish in the first place. But, you know, I think a personal and professional crisis is surely capable of yielding more than one good life lesson. So I'm going to return to that story today to talk about it in terms of the stories we tell ourselves about ourselves and about other people. You know, I speak of it somewhat lightly now, but I didn't for many years. My story of struggling to finish was one I polished a lot. I was fond of it and was fondling it, right? It was my constant reminder that I was deeply flawed and I held on to it for a long time. When I think about the places my mind wanders to, for many years, it was to that story. You know, if things were going well, then that dictator voice retold the story to show me that whatever was going well was probably a fluke. When things were going badly, the child voice could use the story to tell me that my life had always been kind of a mess and that I was kind of helpless. I mean, what a versatile story, right? Eventually, I worked with a wonderful life coach named Susan Grace Beekman, and I found myself asking her, how long am I going to hold on to this blankety blank story? But before I tell you a little bit more about how it relates to other people and the stories I tell about other people, I want to say something about facts. You know, there are facts, right? The temperature in the room, you notice me getting red, it is kind of hot in here. Time passed, you know, from the time I left graduate school till the time I defended my dissertation. That's a fact. And the fact that I had a job that required me to finish, right? That's a fact. But letting go of the role that the story plays in my life doesn't mean that I'm trying to rewrite my history or ignore those facts. It's not about the facts, right? It's about what I'm doing with those and what story emerges from those facts and how the grip that that story has on me is the cause of suffering, not the facts themselves. So in this particular case, I want to focus on my relationship with two other people. And one is my dissertation advisor. This was a woman I deeply respected, and I just plain liked. We were very close when I was at school. And after I left, after I moved on to a job, and as I was struggling to finish, my view of her, my view of my relationship with her, and probably most domineering, my view of her view of me really suffered. You know, my limiting belief about how the world ought to work said that she should be reaching out to me more. She should be more supportive. She should be more encouraging me. I felt when I was in her presence, when I was in school and we were in the same town, that I had a lot of her attention and that she really cared about me. But once I left, I felt like I disappeared from her life, that I no longer mattered to her. And at the time, you know, could think about that and cue childhood trauma of absent father, right? But I didn't think about it in that way at the time. I can look back and say, duh, of course I was very vulnerable or susceptible to that feeling of abandonment. But that's the child voice, right? No one cares about you. You are entirely on your own. So one day, about a year into this great job, but unfinished dissertation, I got a letter in the mail from my advisor. Now, this was not so long ago that there wasn't email, so a letter in the mail was kind of a momentous thing. And I'll be honest with you, I only remember two sentences from that letter. You don't have to finish. You don't have to get a PhD. Oh, I was devastated. It seemed to be my worst fear coming true, right? I believed my advisor's good opinion of me was essential in order for me to accomplish my goal of finishing my dissertation. And because she had the thing I valued, right, she had a PhD, when she told me I didn't need to have one, I thought she's saying I'm not good enough, and that's something I already believe, and she's confirming it. So that literally that day, I was walking across campus with the letter in my hand, and a woman I'd only known for about a year came walking by, and she said hello, and then she very foolishly said, "How are you?" And I burst into tears. And She did an amazing thing. First of all, she made me tell her my story and show her the letter, actually. And then she met with me once a week for over a year. She read every word of my dissertation, often twice. She talked to me. She gave me feedback, but she also mostly listened to me. She let me talk about my dissertation. She let me talk about my fear about my dissertation. She encouraged me, and I felt less alone. I felt less isolated, and I was able to hang on at times when I really, really, really wanted to let go. But again, a lot of years passed, and I did complete the dissertation, and years passed, but I held on to the version of the story that said, I struggled to finish my dissertation. I put my career at risk. Someone I cared about abandoned me. It's a miracle I finished. I probably didn't deserve it. So years later, I told Susan the story, and we not only talked about why I held on to it, you know, why I needed to keep punishing myself with it, we also talked about how the version of the story I told kept me from seeing two things that are really important and about the other people involved. And the first one is that until I had that conversation with Susan, I never questioned my interpretation of my advisor's letter. I had not the slightest glimmer of a thought in my head that there was anything to that letter except her desire to hurt me, her intention to hurt me and undermine me and discourage me and, I mean, all those things. But really, I think it came down to I thought she wanted to hurt me and she succeeded, right? So Susan said to me, is there any way that you could interpret that letter as simply sincere? That she was sincerely and without judgment saying to you, you do not have to get a PhD. You don't have to do this. And maybe the subtext was, and you're perfectly fine just as you are. You don't have to do this. Well, as I say, that had never occurred to me. But there was a way in which it did resonate, right? We had been close. I'd had a very high opinion of her, and you know what? She had a high opinion of me. So maybe it was a story that didn't need a villain, but for years she had been the villain of that story. I had never been able to even consider letting go of having assigned her that part. You know, it's not a novel, right? It's not a film. Maybe it doesn't actually need a villain. So, you know, what about the possibility that I just don't know my advisor's intent, right? I never asked her what she meant. In one sense, of course, you know, there was a structural relationship. She was my advisor. I was a graduate student. I had something that I sort of needed her. I needed her approval in order to get. Although, you know, in a very practical and literal sense, I could have asked someone else to be my advisor, right? I wasn't trapped in that way. I probably felt trapped, but is there someone else? I could name three people right now I could have asked, to be honest with you. That never occurred to me. Partly because, you know, it's the sense of how I see you seeing me. She was extremely important to me. Her opinion of me was extremely important to me. And so that's all I could really think about. So I wasn't actually thinking even about she's an obstacle to my finishing. I was really focused on and devastated by the idea that this person whose opinion really mattered to me had a very low opinion of me. At least that was the inference that I made. Because, you know, the letter never said that. She never said, I don't believe in you. I don't think you can do this. She literally did not say that. That was in me. That was my story. So, and we do this a lot, right? We make inferences, and we do it in part because, you know, we're smart, we're insightful, we're observant, and oftentimes I can make an inference about somebody else and be correct, right? And I get just enough positive reinforcement. I do it successfully just enough to believe that I can go through the world somewhat mindlessly making attributions about other people's thoughts and feelings and intentions. So, you know, if I go back to Kevin and the challenges he faces managing employees, when he tells me those stories, he's really starting to notice how much he makes assumptions about how they would take feedback, right? Oh, I don't want to upset them. I don't want to micromanage. And it's not that sense of that he knows he wants to be responsible for his communication, but in a way, he wants to be responsible for their reaction to his communication. And that's where we're kind of in a tough spot, right? If I take all of that on and all of those inferences and tell myself this story about how you're going to react, then chances are I'm going to stop myself over and over and over again. I'm going to be stuck in a story about this interaction. So staying out of other people's business is a really interesting challenge, isn't it? And thinking about and making assumptions about other people's thoughts and feelings and how they'll react to things, that's really a question about being in other people's business. And the other part of this that I want to mention in this context of this story is there's a woman named Judy Ford, and she has this great quote that I love, which is, "Your opinion of me is none of my business." And that's a very difficult thing to wrap your mind around, right? I mean, where is this? Where, if you're watching me today, you're watching me on Facebook, and you might want to give me a thumbs up, right? So there are ways in which we've kind of monetized your opinion. Well, in this case, not monetized, but we have monetized some of it if you're an influencer, that sort of thing, right? That your opinion of me actually really matters in some interesting ways. We've accelerated that. But if I want to step back from that, if I want to calm down from that, if I really want to go back and look inward a little bit and say, what is the cause of my suffering? When I am dependent on, when my good opinion of myself depends entirely on my perception of your good opinion of me, wow, I'm in a lose-lose situation. So when we come back, we're going to talk about some things that we might do in the face of the stories we tell ourselves. You are listening to Mary Angela McGuire on Nothing But Now on Transformation Talk Radio. Be back soon.
Are you ready to transform your life and embrace magical experiences? Talking to Tanis with your host, Tanis McRae, is here to help you find your joy in life. Tune in live every first and third Friday at 10 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Let's awaken your experience and create the change necessary to take back your right to choose who you are. For more about Tanis, visit TalkingToTanis.com.
It's time to get your life back on Burn Bright Today with Jennifer Marcinelli. Tune in each month on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Learn to move from the darkness of burning out to the light of burning bright. Jennifer is redefining stress and the energetic causes of burnout, shining a light on process to get your life back. For more information about Jennifer and her work, visit burnbrighttoday.com.
Hi, this is Kimberly Carlson, and I would love for you to tune in to All In Healing Radio, where together we will begin to experience health, happiness, and harmony in all areas and aspects of life. Join us every first Tuesday of the month at 11 a.m. on TransformationTalkRadio.com. All In Healing will help you release layers of negative beliefs and energies for radiant health, deep joy, and greater abundance. Visit me at KimberlyCarlson.com.
Hey, how's it going? If it's stressful or just plain exhausting, New Light Living is here to ask, is this the way you want to live? Join me, your intuitive spiritual life coach and host, Erica Sullivan, every week on New Light Living. Discover the power of creative tools to start living every day as your ideal dream day. See your life in the new light. To learn more, visit newlightliving.com.
Have you ever wondered what your pets think about? Do you know what your pets are saying to you? Dr. Monica will be your pet's translator to help you understand what your pets are trying to communicate to you. Enhance the bond with your furry friends on Pets Talk with Pet Communicator Dr. Monica each month on TransformationTalkRadio.com. For more information about Dr. Monica, visit PetCommunicator.com.
TheAngelLady.net.
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 TheAngelLady.net. 1-800-323-1790. 1-800-323-1790. Sue Storm. TheAngelLady.net.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back. I'm Mary Angela McGuire. This is Nothing But Now on Transformation Talk Radio, and today we're talking about our stories. So I've been talking about the story of finishing my dissertation and the story I told myself about my dissertation advisor as a villain. And when I started to rethink, imagine other possibilities for that story, not to change the facts, but to simply say, is there another way to look at this? That story started to loosen its grip on me. The other aspect of the story was how, in terms of how I saw other people seeing me. I want to go back to the friend, right? The friend, Carolyn, and that's actually her name, who helped me finish my dissertation, who sat with me, who was, she didn't write any of the words. She was my witness. She was my companion with it. She was the person that allowed me to feel less alone and less isolated, which, if you think about it, of course, is not a role my advisor could play. Literally, she was 500 miles away. She couldn't sit with me in the cafe and help me breathe through my anxiety and fear, right? And in some ways, we might say it wasn't her job. It was maybe more the appropriate task of a friend. I don't know. But the thing about the way I told the story for many years was that Carolyn's role was more or less eclipsed, right? I mean, she's kind of this little hero who pops up at the end. And instead, another way of thinking about the whole experience is to say, what a triumph of friendship. What a beautiful story of friendship. What a beautiful story of a person who went so far out of her way to help a person she didn't even really know that well. So that's when we think about our stories, and we're going to talk now about some strategies about thinking about stories, is in this case about how does the way I tell the story put me in a vice grip? How might it eclipse the role that other people play in the story? So we're going to get to that in a second, but let's, in general, so talking about stories, we get lost in our stories, don't we? We have stories, if we start to notice, if we start to use some of the mindfulness practices we've been talking about, of quiet times when we can try to focus on what's immediately in front of us, we can start to notice where our mind is going, we can start to become students of our own mind, notice our habits. What are the habits of judgment? What are the habits of stories? Where does our mind typically go? And when we can do that, we can start to notice these patterns and these limiting beliefs that are shaping not our external reality, but really our internal reality, our sense of how things ought to go, and then the conflict and anxiety and fear and frustration we may feel when things inevitably do not go as we think they ought to go. So, what are some ways that we can work with our stories? And the first thing, of course, is really just noticing them. And particularly, I'm trying to pay more attention to the ones that come unbidden, right? So that's one of the reasons for developing a capacity for a more quiet mind, is because that's when we can notice where our mind goes. And, you know, when we think about the stories, those places our mind goes, we really want to be able to distinguish between when I'm reviewing a story, when I'm thinking about an incident or something that's happened, for the purpose of working something out, right? When am I trying to understand? When am I trying to have a more clarity so that I maybe make different choices in a similar situation, right? There are reasons that we kind of go over things to try to figure it out. But when have we moved from trying to work something out to polishing a story, to polishing the frame that I'm putting around my experience? That's the discernment we really want to notice. So when we are noticing the stories, we can ask ourselves some questions. You know, what does our version of the story make it hard to see? My version of my dissertation story eclipsed Carolyn's, the sunny role of friendship, right? The salvation of friendship, right? It was outside the frame of what I thought was the critical part of the story, which was my suffering, right? And so that's one question to ask ourselves, is what makes it hard to see? What, you know, a frame means that there's something inside and outside. So what's outside the frame? What does my story tell me about how I see you seeing me, right? What does it reveal about that? About the inferences, the assumptions I'm making, the way in which I'm kind of in your business, making inferences about how, what you must believe, what your intentions must be, how you must be seeing me if you're acting the way you're acting. It's not that I'm always going to be wrong about that, but the question is that essential right now? How does that help me? How is that important right now? Sometimes it is important, but not always. And that's what we want to, again, be able to try to distinguish. And then there are some thought experiments I'd like you to think about. One is trying to tell the story from the perspective of another character in the story and to assign to them a benign motive. Now, for every story, no. And we'll come back to that in a second, but no, not for every story. But think about some of the stories that you've told yourself for a really long time. Complicated stories, maybe. Painful stories, hurtful places. Not telling you, asking you to think about this thought experiment to change the facts, to deny the facts, not at all. But to just say, you know, we see the world from our own perspective. And it can loosen the grip of a story to try to imagine it from another perspective. Right. I think it's helpful to try to notice the facts and separate them from the inferences, right? My story about my anxiety and stress about doing the show versus the fact that I'm upstairs in a closed room with closed windows and it's a lot of lights on and I'm hot, right? Why is my face red? There are facts and there are inferences. And then maybe to ask yourself, when you're asking yourself or trying to, think about it from another person's perspective to how they might have told the story of the same incident or same relationship or same event. Do their intentions matter? And the reason I think this is an important question is that I notice in my own experience, my own life, and also with other people that, and I've said something similar to this before, that it's as if I have to get really angry in order to say I have a boundary. Right, I have to attribute a lot of really bad motives sometimes or intentions to another person in order for me to say, no, I don't want to do that. No, I don't agree with you. And so by asking the question, do the other person's intentions matter? It's not to absolve them or to say, you know, their behavior is okay. It's to say, regardless of their intentions, I have a right to a boundary. I have a right to disagree. Right? It's giving ourselves permission and not having to go through a massive amount of internal anxiety and stress about the way they see me and being mad in order to just say, no, I don't like this. Right? What would have happened if I had simply said to my advisor, here's how I'm reading your letter. Was that what you meant? Right? I mean, it sounds simple. It's extremely hard to do, right? Lots of things got in my way. But at least if I couldn't do it in the moment, I can do it now, or I could do it now with a life coach, to not to change my relationship with that person, right? But to change my relationship with myself, to change my relationship with the story I tell myself about that particular aspect of my life, okay? So I think as we are moving towards the end, I want to say a couple of things about why this is important to talk about our stories beyond what we've been talking about in terms of mindfulness. One is, I think it's important for us to locate our authentic stories, you know, sort of the story behind the stories, and recognizing that in doing that may take me to some very uncomfortable places. But those are places from which I can grow rather than places that are a trap. And sometimes the stories that I'm fondling, those stories are a trap and they're keeping me from seeing something more authentic. And I think, you know, one of the things about our culture as we try to acknowledge people's stories and value people's stories is we want that authentic story, not the one that they're using as a frame to keep themselves in a stuck place. And I think if all I can see are those stories, those trapped stories, then it's hard for me to find the authentic story. And the other reason, and this has more to do with how we see other people, is, you know, I think there are people in the world who do harm. There are people who intend to do harm. And I don't want to spend my precious time and energy mindlessly retelling stories that cause me harm, that undermine my ability to relate in an authentic and honest way with others, and that do nothing to of substance to combat evil. I can't do that if I'm lost in helpless, mindless stories. And I think we all want to work towards a better world. And one of the ways to do that is to let go of some of those stories that are keeping us stuck in place and maybe are immobilizing us. So, three more deep breaths. Just notice your breath. Relax. What's your intention for today? I hope it's to be well. My name is Mary Angela McGuire, If you'd like to know more about my work, you can contact me at maguirelifecoach.com. That's M-A-G-U-I-R-E, lifecoach.com. You can contact me through my website. And we will be back next week on Nothing But Now, where we're going to talk about what's the difference between acceptance and resignation. Massive, right? So I hope you will join me. We'll be here next Thursday at noon Pacific time, 3 o'clock Eastern. You are listening to Nothing But Now on Transformation Talk Radio. Thanks for joining me. You've been listening to Nothing But Now, Mindful Living with Dr. Mary Angela Maguire on Transformation Talk Radio. Join me next time as we continue to practice mindfulness and challenge ourselves to change. If you'd like to find out more about my work or contact me, please go to my website, maguirelifecoach.com. That's maguirelifecoach.com. See you next time.
The music for Nothing But Now was created by Salt Theory.